SBRM methodology, SBRM report. I believe Dr. Gabriel is going to present for Paul Rago, who's in Dogfish Land, Dogfish Track. Doc, Wendy, you can sit up at that table right there. You'll be on mic on the record, and your little clicker should work from there.
That one? Okay. So you've got four pieces of paper for SBRM. There's a one-pager that's called handout summary. It looks like that. And then there's a white paper that says standardized bycatch reporting methodology. And then there's one that says standardized bycatch reporting methodology that's a PowerPoint. And then there's this thing we call the placemat here, which is a larger size version of a piece that you may have gotten earlier. So it's a little more legible. There's about three parts to this. In terms of products that I'm going to be discussing today or kind of leading you through a little bit, some of it's more for information and some of it we're going to get down into the gory details. The first component is the SBRM annual discard report. And that's a report that's available online, and you can get it off either our website or the Observer Program website. For those of you who are familiar with the report, it's the same format as it was in 2009, and it summarizes the observer data from 2008 to 2009. The report has two major sections to it. There's a section that deals with species group summaries, and then a second section that deals with individual summaries. The one thing that characterizes this report, I find, is its volume. And the reason it's on the website and you don't have a copy of that is because we probably need about a forklift here to get down to all of the details that are on the papers that are in that report. Just in terms of units, things that are incidental takes are in numbers and things that are fish are in pounds. This report is in response to the requirements in the Federal Register, and that's why it's so large. And if you're not familiar with it, here's what's in it. There are a whole set of tables that are described in the handout summary on the back. And also this slide here indicates a list of species groups. The species are grouped in some cases, they're single species groups like Atlantic salmon or butterfish. Sometimes you have a stock complex, fluke, scup, black sea bass, large mesh groundfish, and there's a whole suite of individual species there. So when it talks about species group summaries, it's at the capital letter level of this table here. When it talks about individual species, it'll be listed, broken out at that disaggregated level. The actual tables, walking through the categories that are on that handout that says handout summary, you've got a whole series of summaries of observer data in terms of individual sea days by fleet. In this case, this includes gear type and access area, trip code, region, et cetera, and quarter. There's a summary of trips aggregated over the sea days. At that same level of resolution. There are trips aggregated by statistical area, and then there are summaries of kept and discarded pounds by each one of those categories, groups, including fish, turtles, at both the species group and the individual species level. And there's also a summary of kept and discarded pounds. So this is all in response to the Federal Register requirements and leads to that voluminous report. If you want really detailed descriptions of the table contents, that's in the handout summary. So this is background. Probably more of interest is the recommendation for C-days under the SBRM for 2010. And in general, this the objectives of the C-day requirement is to attain a 30% CV around the aggregate estimate of discard for the stock complex or the species group. So we updated the analysis, and this is the royal we here. Most of the work that you see here is done by Susan Wigley, who's done a tremendous job in terms of compiling all of this. This document is available on the web, and it's also available as this handout that says Standardized Bycatch Reporting Methodology, C-Day Analysis, and Prioritization. So this goes through the process that we used this year. There are a couple of new wrinkles this year. If you look at this report annually, there are seven new fleets that we've identified with specific gear codes now. The rule trawl now is broken out as a separate gear code. You may see it in some of these reports as only occurring for a couple months, and that's the month that the separate gear code existed in the Observer program. But in fact, prior to that, it was in use, but it was rolled up in as a large mesh otter trawl. And when in the projections, you may not see a specific C-day recommendation for rule trawl coverage, but it will be included in large mesh otter trawl. So we've got seven new fleets this year. We've also made the treatment of turtle bycatch more rigorous. We've updated a series of filters that we use to make sure that we don't assign a lot of C-days to cells where there's not a lot of impact in terms of total discard or total turtle mortality. So we've updated the census of fleets or the characterization of fleets that are unlikely to have sea turtle bycatch. And then we identified the fleets that generated 95% of the discard and then opted not to sample the fleets that contributed the remaining 5% of the discard. So that's what constitutes that discard filter. And discard of turtles here, again, is bycatch. We then updated the total mortality filter so that we ended up trying to identify the fleets that generate 98% of the total mortality and then throw out the 2% of the fleets that don't do it much. And it turns out that after you apply this filter in terms of who generates the discard, there's not much left over to generate total mortality. So most of the filtering operation happens at the discard filter level rather than the actual mortality level. We've included a new analysis this year that tells you what you're going to get with a CV from the prioritized C-days that you have. So if what you see is what you get in terms of prioritized C-days, how bad is it actually going to be in terms of the CV? So if you can't make your SBRM goal, how far away are you in terms of your CV goal? And I'll get into a couple examples later on, and it turns out in some cases you may not be as in bad shape as you think. Other new wrinkles, we've now included some turtle monitoring. It says requirements, but those are statistical requirements. If you wanted to monitor turtle bycatch to the level at SBRM levels, we've generated those numbers, and those are included in industry-funded scallop fleets in this analysis. And then there's the last 4 points are all related to the implementation of sectors under Amendment 16. We anticipate a lot higher coverage of New England groundfish fleets as a consequence. Before, when we used to separate out the coverage of U.S.-Canada B-Day and SAPS, we now are just combining those all together because we anticipate that the coverage rate is going to be the same or better under the sector target of 30% than the previous levels. So there's no explicit U.S.-Canada B-Day allocation of C-days to cover that. The other then we get into the unknown parts here, that the fishing patterns are going to be really different. Our pre-trip notification is going to assign coverage based on a percentage basis, and we're going to also see changes in the fishery patterns. So before, in previous years, we used to use what happened last year or the year before as an indicator of what we might expect in the upcoming year. And we're looking at it under the sector, from the sector situation, we don't really have too much of an idea as to what's going to happen. So we didn't use the optimization method because we're pretty clear that things aren't going to look the way they did 2 years ago, but we don't know what they are going to look like. So there's no formal statistical optimization that we use to try and allocate to squeeze the last little bit of variance out by using all the information that we have historically. So that didn't happen this year, although we used the standard 30% CV. In terms of what we recommended for sea days under this under these criteria, we've increased the number of fleets to 51. That includes those 7 new fleets. But the actual recommended number of sea days has dropped. This is in part because some of the effort has shifted into more homogeneous fisheries that don't require as intense coverage, and also that the pilot programs from those new fleets aren't very extensive, that it only takes about, we're only estimating that it would be about 108 pilot days out of the total allocation to cover those new fleets. You may see the term filtered sea days or recommended sea days. They're synonymous in this case. That's what we recommend. So in this particular exercise here, if you want to turn to Table 4, and in this standardized bycatch reporting methodology white paper, there's a couple of columns in there that I can walk you through a little bit. We tried to provide a little more background than we did last year. And this, if you look on Table 4, you can see those species groups going across the column headings, and then the gear types, the 51 different gear type combinations going down the rows. And if you read across in any one of those lines, you'll see different numbers. And those numbers are the numbers of sea days that would be required to achieve the 30% CV for that species group or species in that particular fishery. So for every gear species group combination, there's a number of days to get that 30% CV. Now, in this case here, if you look at line 6, you see the if you go across row 6, we've got make sure I've got this right. We've got small mesh otter trawl on that. And if you look across, you see that if you want to get the that groundfish complex requires 2,175 sea days to get a 30% CV. If you want to get a 30% CV around the dogfish component, you'd only need 237 days. So we take the maximum number out of that column, which is under groundfish, and put that in our recommended sea day column. So it's usually the maximum number moving across that line that it, as a function of a species group that ends up generating our recommended maximum. So if you get the maximum for that particular species group, you've automatically met or exceeded the CV targets for all the other species groups that co-occur in that fleet. There's also a line there for pilots. This happens when we have a new fleet and we don't have any filter information for it. We don't have any information on sample size, so we put in a pilot number of sea days there. In some cases, there are old fleets that we've ended up filtering out all of the coverage. We want to be able to get some minimal coverage of all of these fleets, so that's where we also can recommend pilot coverage for those days. So if you don't see a maximum or you see one number repeated all the way across the side, it's usually because it's a pilot. And we don't have any information on those individual species groups to generate a specific number. Okay, so we come up with a recommendation for all of the fleets, if we total up all of those down that whole column on table four, of about 14,147 sea days, down to the fifth significant figure here. And we're dividing, we then divide those sea days up in terms of funding types based on how the fleets map into different industry-funded programs. So there are nine scallop fleets now that have industry-funded, the potential for industry-funded observer coverage, and the sea days that would be associated with that total, those component fleets, those nine scallop fleets, and the rows are listed on the screen, are about 4,458 days. The remaining days are from non-industry funded, we'll call those agency funded fleets, where there's no provision at this point for industry funded observing. And this is a repeating theme here. For the industry funded fleets, there's a work plan that's under development to generate a match between set-asides for observer coverage and how much observer coverage is needed. So this SBRM estimate will be working into those estimates, but it's a work in progress. So when you see some of the information that's filled in for industry-funded fleets, that may be subject to change as that working group proceeds. So we now look at some of the constraints that we have. Again, we've got this work plan under development for requirements under industry-funded projects, and we also have a series of constraints for funding that comes from the agency. This is basically a list of all of the budget lines that go into the observer program, and very few of them are actually available for sea day coverage anywhere you want. We have some funding that's devoted to supporting bycatch reporting, and that goes to help support the folks who generate the 1,500 pages worth of reports and all the rest of the information that goes into generating these sea schedules. The Marine Mammal Protection Act, we have a line associated with that, but it's mandated to estimate marine mammal bycatch. And marine mammals aren't part of the SBRM algorithm, so we can't use that, we can't divert that funding to look at other elements in the program. We do get some benefits from this because in some cases we are able to estimate other components of bycatch rather than marine mammal bycatch, but that's not the primary objective of the program. Anything we get out of that's gravy. New England groundfish. It says permanent, but it's a combination of two sources of funding. One is a New England groundfish fishery permanent component, and then there is a section that is in there for at least the upcoming 2 years for at-sea monitoring. And so there are two flavors of New England groundfish money we've considered that to be primarily applied to New England groundfish fisheries or fisheries that take groundfish as bycatch. We get some funding from the National Observer Program. That helps support the infrastructure that in some cases is associated with industry-funded programs. So the industry pays for the observer to go out to sea. Meanwhile, we have to pay somebody to edit the data and enter it, and so it's usable. Finally, we have a little bit under a line item called Atlantic Coast Observers. That's permanent money, but it's a fairly small amount of money, and we use that that's dedicated to mid-Atlantic fisheries. And we split that funding 50-50 between the fish component, fish part of the house and the turtle part of the house. So although it looks like we have a lot of funding for sea days, we do have constraints in terms of where we can apply it. And if we look at, this just breaks out the number of sea days by source. You can see the funding under Atlantic Coast for all observers for both sea turtles and finfish is only 646 days. Meanwhile, New England groundfish has permanent funding for about 4,600 days. And this year we have funding so far for about 5,100 days of at-sea monitoring. There are 10 days of Marine Mammal Protection Act funding that we can get fish bycatch data and turtle bycatch data from. We assume that there will be, the industry would fund approximately 4,000 days. And again, this was contingent on that work plan. So that 4,000 that you see is an assumption. That's all it is. So we look at this and we say, hey, we've got 14,000 funded days, and that's bigger than the 14,000 sea days that we need. So, geez, we should be in good shape. But again, when these constraints start to apply, then we start to see complications. So our prioritization process goes to Table 5, and I will walk you through sequentially what happens in each one of those columns. And that's the one that also is in that 11 by 17 format. So if you have eye strain, then that's a good one to look at. The first column, let me see if I have a column. You can't really see that anyway. The first column is the recommended number of sea days that you need to attain a 30% CV. So that is, in an ideal world, if we had all the money in the world with no strings attached, that's what we would need to attain a 30% CV for each one of those fleet species combinations. We then end up taking those, so that's the first column with sea days. Then if we take assume that we have two funding categories, we have industry funding that ends up applying to a subset of those scallop fisheries, and then agency funding without any constraints, then we end up with the second column. So you'll notice that some of those columns end up being proportionally allocated, or they're proportionally allocated based on the on the original sea day recommendation. So first column, well, let's see here. Right. The third column takes those, applies the funding constraints by region. So you see from, let's say, you'll notice that a lot of the mid-Atlantic ones end up declining. And then the fourth column, which is the one that we're probably most interested in, is the prioritized sea days. And what's happened on the prioritized sea day component is that we've tried to integrate the requirements of the sector coverage with the SBRM coverage. Okay, so... so this is the one we're really we're most interested in. Well, it turns out that lurking behind that that column really are all of those different flavors, probably about four or five different flavors of funding. And there's also assumptions about how that funding, how that coverage ends up getting moved around from different fleet components based on the way that fleets operate in terms of effort. So if we have something where we have a fishery where we have a target percent coverage level, then the percent coverage level is going to be contingent on the effort. So we can't tell somebody, go out and fish so many days because we need to target 10% coverage on your on your particular fleet in order to get SBRM coverage. So we're kind of at the mercy in some cases where it's percentage coverage in terms of we're at the mercy of where the effort actually is deployed, and so that leads to some real disparities between our original design and then where the coverage gets deployed. So we have the industry funded components there for scallop fleets. We have a component for the at sea monitoring that is restricted to longline, large mesh otter trawls and gill nets. And we are taking a little bit of liberty with that because we are assuming that if fish, that there may be some effort that is exerted in southern New England that ends up getting landed in a mid-Atlantic port. So you do see some coverage on some mid-Atlantic fleets, there is some coverage from Mid-Atlantic fleets rolled up into this prioritized C-Day list. There's also a component for the permanent New England groundfish money, and we've allocated that over the different gear types proportional to the effort that they've generated over the past year, again, bearing in mind that next year may bear no resemblance to that. There's also a component in there for protected species coverage, primarily in the drift gillnet fishery and some otter trawls in specific times and space places for sea turtles. And then there's also some C-Day coverage that we have applied for topics of special interest that also have groundfish interactions. For example, the herring and the herring fleet in terms of midwater paired and single trawl coverage in New England and the Mid-Atlantic. So that's all. And we have also covered some parts of the scallop fleet that don't have industry funding provisions because there is the potential for them to take groundfish as well. So this is a combination of statistical methodology and then a little bit of ad hoc in terms of response to questions of interest, bearing in mind that we're going to have a lot of when we're trying to meet percent coverage levels, at SBRM simultaneously, it's trying to, like, sort out two bands in a parade. You don't know which one to march to, so you try and do the best you can to level the differences. Okay. And, again, the pre-trip notification system, if you're not familiar with that, is part of the way that we're going to allocate coverage under sectors and the common pool that vessels are going to have to phone in before they leave, and then we'll be able to consult either potentially this matrix or the coverage that we've had to date in each one of those sectors to determine if that particular trip needs an observer or not, or an at-sea monitor. New this year, if you want to switch to table 6 in your handout, is the multi-page handout, that is, tells you what happens to your CV if you put in the prioritized C-days that we put on this list. And, for example, if you go down to line number, let's see, how small is that line? Oh, let's try line number 6. You'll notice that number of prioritized C days, the 1537, is shy of what you need to achieve your 30% coverage. But if you look across for each one of those species groups, you find out that if you apply that level of coverage for skates, for example, you get a CV of about 9%, dogfish 11, fluke scup black sea bass around 11%. And then for your groundfish species complex, you have a CV of about 37%. So do you want to spend an extra 600 days to get to move from 37 to 30? And meanwhile, you're doing a really good job on all of the other species groups that co-occur in that fishery. So that's a little bit of a way to see how close if you're not making your goal, how far away you are, and how well you're doing in all of the rest of the components that aren't constrained by the 30% target. And so this is blown up a little bit for row 6. So it shows that most of those species are doing better than most of those species groups are doing better than 30%. And if you want to get that extra 7%, you know, you have to allocate another 600 days. Can you live with that 37%, given that you're doing well enough on your other groups as well? So that's just a piece of information to see how far away you are. And, of course, here's the fine print. We perennially undersample the Mid-Atlantic fleets and the small mesh fleets there, because they don't receive priority necessarily under the at-sea monitoring program and under the under the line items that are addressed specifically to New England fleets. Part of the problem is that if the change, again, the change in management regulations is making it really hard for us to predict where the effort's going to go and how we're going to be able to first meet coverage, to meet these SBRM targets and meld them with coverage targets at the same time. We're going to be moving more towards what we call a proportional allocation scheme, which means every time you call in, let's say we'll take a fixed fraction of each one of these fleets or each one of these sectors that calls in. So if we're looking, say, for 30% coverage, it'll be every third caller in each one of these sectors. Part of the problem, the challenge there is going to be making sure that we get coverage of all of the sectors at the same time. We're not overshooting our budget because we don't know if all of a sudden people are going to take more C days per trip or less C days per trip, and we have to buy C days by the day. So if the trip length changes a lot and we're trying to cover 30% of the trips, depending on whether they get shorter or longer, we could be ahead or really behind budget. So we have to look at that at the same time that we're trying to juggle these statistical aspects. And that talks a little bit more. This slide talks a little bit more about how we're assigning coverage here. And again, to reiterate that the industry-funded coverage is ongoing. We'd like your comments on the prioritization by February 26th, if you can. I understand you may be under a little different schedule here in terms of having the time to discuss, digest, and formulate a response. We're eagerly awaiting feedback as at your earliest convenience, which from what I understand would probably be April. I'll attempt to make any explanations that I can in terms of clarifying things. There's a lot of layers to this in order to try and make it work because it has to go through a lot of fleet components and a lot of species group components simultaneously, and our problem here is that we don't have a very good crystal ball in terms of how best to allocate this in the future because we don't know how things are going to be arrayed.
Thanks, Wendy. I know a lot of work goes into this, a tremendous amount of work. And I think I've made this comment since this SBRM thing has been going on, but how do we know what you're finding out so that we can have sort of a way to guide you towards what to do with the days? I mean, you're shooting for this CV value, and you have a budget, a pot of money that some of it has constraints on it, and you've presented, the best possible fit from your perspective on how to allocate those days given the constraints on the pot of money. But we never, ever, in my opinion, never get to see the results of all of this effort and time on the water, and none of us would have any idea whether or not there is an issue in a particular fishery, and therefore wouldn't have an idea of whether or not we're doing the best we can to minimize bycatch to the extent practicable. And so while I value and appreciate the opportunity for the council to have input into the allocation of sea days moving forward every year, I think that's important. Wouldn't our recommendation have more value or weight if we could see the results of this work year in and year out, in terms of fisheries or in terms of our management plans, not in terms of large mesh in New England or floating traps in the Mid-Atlantic, but you know what I mean? Scale to our FMP so that if we have an issue in one of our FMPs, we know we've got to do something about it.
Yeah, this is designed to help get observers out in the right place at the right time. We can't really, let's say we have a problem in a scup fishery, for example, and I'll pick that as a just make that up. It's very difficult to find. It's much more difficult to find a trip that's say I'm going to target scup on this trip, that the guy knows a priori that that's what he's going to target, and he's going to come back at the end of the trip with a targeted scup trip. We do have, on a broader basis, we're a lot more successful if we group by region. We have to group by more aggregated region gear combinations, because we can't stratify by individual target species when we send the observers out. So that's part of it is a logistic problem. In terms of the feedback, we send this out as a multi-species program, and the results get analyzed on a single-species basis. So in each one of the stock assessments, there are tables of discard estimates by, in some cases, by fishery and by species or by stock. And the problem is that those are disaggregated at the individual species level. They're there, and the analysis has been done to estimate the discards in those components. And it's a question of trying to group them under one roof to do that. But the individual pieces are there on the assessment basis, and the individual assessment scientist a lot of time, puts a lot of care and feeding into those estimates, using as much information as they can bring to bear on that particular analysis. So this is kind of a one-size-fits-all operation that's designed to send people out in the field to collect the data. And when they come back with the data, we have these broad kind of aggregation, these aggregation requirements that we've got under the Federal Register requirements, but the actual analyses of the discard estimates themselves are done in the assessment. We thought about putting out a single, a one-size-fits-all discard estimate, but then we've got a problem of when we actually go back and sand and varnish that estimate on a species-by-species basis, then we've got, like, multiple numbers, and people don't like that. I don't like it. It makes it hard.
No, and I appreciate the need to deploy the assets in the most efficient manner and to comply with the laws and all of that. I just put it this way. How would we know if there's a problem? I mean, maybe there's a huge problem with handliners slaughtering lobsters. It's just it's out of control, and the council needs to do something about it. Is there no mechanism for the council to be made aware of that until an assessment on either lobsters occurs, and then the assessment scientist is not really under an obligation to inform the handline management body that you've got a problem, you're killing all our lobsters, right? So, like, where's the feedback?
I'm afraid the feedback at this point comes back through at the assessment time frame. We will have more a faster feedback loop under the sector management program if we can get things up and running, where we'd like to turn the data around in a matter of a couple of weeks in terms of the raw, the first cut of it. So that, in terms of providing an early warning system there, that information should be going, in this case, to sector managers and sectors. It may not be the entire, it may not be broadcast fleet-wide. That just depends on the, confidentiality agreements. So in terms of that feedback loop in the sector arena, there's a short feedback potential there. And Nancy may have a comment on that, too.
Yeah, I just want to be clear. I'm not looking for this information for, to be punitive. There are other things going on. There are shifts in the range and presence of and absence of species, ecosystem considerations. And rather than know individually at the table, away from the table, that these things are happening, having the opportunity to validate them and get in front of these issues and perhaps tailor our management or become more flexible to things that are happening in the ocean. I know that's a long-term goal. I know that's of the Science Center. I know they have a whole new branch. You have a whole new branch that's looking at this. I know that the council's had discussions about ecosystem-based fishery management, but I think getting the feedback is going to be important. Nancy?
Yeah, thanks, John. Wendy, as she indicated, is filling in, so she hasn't been a part of some of the internal discussions that we've actually had about this. And we had a bit of a discussion, as you recall, about input-output at the NRCC meeting, and we've had some internal discussions about providing some kind of a report at the end of each of the observation years that can actually provide some kind of evaluation of input and the impact or consequences relative to output. But I have to be honest with you that given all the other distractions that we've had over this last year in particular, we haven't really made a whole lot of progress. But the discussion has been with Paul Rago and some of his folks in terms of being able to put something together that is simpler, put it that way, and does provide input and output consequences. But I think what you're saying is that you'd like us to bump that up to a higher priority in terms of providing some kind of a summary report. And I guess what we need to do is, I'm looking at Jim, and he's shaking his head yes, because he's been part of these discussions as well. And I think what we need to do is obviously bring it back to the center and bump it up, as I said, to a higher priority than, and I'm not going to sit here and whine about workload, because, I mean, there's no point in doing that, but it's obvious that you guys want this feedback, and we're going to have to figure out how to do it.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I just to follow on, I think if you go back to our comments over the years since this was developed, you know, we always ask, what are we commenting on? We don't really know, you know, what we're getting the bang for the buck or where our problems are that we need to prioritize. So, you know, this doesn't mean anything. And the reason it doesn't is because this all supports stock assessments. You can see the justification, and managers get very little out of this. And what we need is a quarterly report that lists the species, especially now with ACLs and AMs. We need to account for everything being caught, and a quarterly report would be great about the different species by different fisheries that are discarded. And I know it's a matter of resources, but to keep bringing this report to us that really doesn't benefit us. It benefits the stock assessments and indirectly benefits us tremendously with total catch. But we need something real-time and more specific.
Yeah, I think the kind of system that we're trying to put together for sector monitoring has the potential to be, if not on a biweekly time span, at least would be closer to the kinds of feedback in terms of data availability. Right now we're looking at sending at-sea monitors out, again, with IPACs for electronic entry, so that just ends up being plugged in, shipped to us and audited. We're trying to implement ruggedized laptops for the full-blown observer program that will, again, hopefully cut down some of that turnaround time. And I think just because of the requirements for ACL monitoring and the short time frames there, I think there'll be the potential there, a lot of spin-offs for aggregating that data, because right now it's very disaggregated into individual sectors. But if we have all those pieces, it at least we've got the pieces to pull that together and cover the sector component, certainly, which would be a pretty significant component of the groundfish fishery, at least.
What else on the council? Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just point out, I think, you know, some of these funding constraints are things that we have to contend with, but they seem to be an impediment, when this finally shakes out and we have the prioritized allocations. They end up being an impediment to getting some of the information that's really critical for both councils. I know the councils and the commission had both requested additional coverage on small mesh trawl fisheries, and so at the end of the day, it looks like after this process, we have about 8% coverage in the mid and 33% coverage in New England relative to the recommended sea days for those respective gear types. And so, again, I realize that's an artifact of the funding constraints, but I think we need to figure out collectively how we might address that in the future and really get a better level of coverage that would give us the information that we need.
I have a question. I understand there's quite a number of fisheries here with zeros in them. And the one that kind of leaps out at me is the lobster trap fishery in New England. I mean, it's probably the most prolific year in terms of number of things in the ocean. It just underwent a major gear modification, you know, requiring sinking rope to deal with known marine and mammal entanglement issues, and there's zero coverage here. Is it covered somewhere else in some other program, or do we just assume that having inflicted a multi-million-dollar gear change on these people that it's made all our problems go away?
This is part of the boundary conditions for the SBRM analysis. It doesn't include marine mammal bycatch, so that would be included under a separate program to monitor marine mammal bycatch. So this is targeted at fish and sea turtles. So to the extent that protected species programs can monitor that, if they have adequate coverage to do that, that's where that problem or solution or observation would live.
So the ones further up that say, you know, X amount of days for stock assessment and X amount of days for protected species, that protected species is turtles, it's not whales?
The protected species is turtles, and sometimes there may be whales, but it would be for whale bycatch, but we get some benefit of some either sea turtle coverage or some finfish bycatch coverage, again, because the amendment puts marine mammals in a separate category that's not covered under this SBRM process here. So protected species would be either sea turtles or whatever the objectives are for marine mammal coverage as bycatch. And I'm not up to speed on the protected species coverage at this point, so I'll have to...
So that's run as a separate... That's what you're saying, it's run as a separate program? There's somebody else out there looking for whales and lobster traps and stuff, or I'm still a little unclear as to what happens to that.
The funding, it's part of it's the funding comes in through a different stream, for example, under that MMPA stream, and then they would take that funding and allocate it to whatever priorities they have to address their issues in terms of trying to get harbor porpoise bycatch estimates or whale entanglement and lobster gear estimates. I mean, the observers that are out there, if they see that kind of stuff happening, then they have the technical ability certainly to make observations on that, even though they have, they may have a different objective, but it is under a separate program in this context.
Okay, I think that may be some of the problems people have in here is that looking at, I mean, certainly there's a million numbers on these charts for one thing. Most of us got bad eyes, number two. And then it doesn't look like this is the total picture then. This is just related to SBRM and not to all bycatch across.
Yeah,
all.
this is not an ecosystem bycatch approach.
So I think that's important for people in the audience and people listening to the audio and whatnot to understand that because something has a zero here doesn't mean it's not necessarily covered somewhere else. Thank you.
Take a couple more comments, then like to move on. Wendy's the messenger on this one. You were actually here to do the calibration report, right? And you got tapped to deliver this as well?
Yeah, well, I'm having as much fun with this, you know.
So will we. So we'll take a couple more comments, and then we're going to put this on the April agenda, give council members and others an opportunity to review what we have been presented today. And if we have suggestions for changing of allocation of days or prioritization, be prepared to bring those in April. But I will take a few more comments or questions, Dr. Pierce, then Mary Beth.
Yeah, Wendy, thanks a lot. You've already described the center's focus on sectors, the importance of monitoring sector trips at sea, the reliance on the pre-trip notification system in order to deal with the sectors. It seems to me that with all these sectors that we have, one could almost treat each sector as a separate fleet because they have specific allocations of these different species. But obviously, when you define fleets in your protocol, you're not looking at specific sectors. You're going ground fish across the board by gear type. Has any thought been given to trying to achieve a 30% coefficient of variation regarding the sea days for each individual sector so that the observer coverage will be spread amongst all the sectors?
There's a difference between a 30% coverage rate, that's kind of the policy target at this point, and a 30% CV. So sometimes you might not be able to have both. And so the observer, the coverage, I think what probably is what may happen, depending on how stable the sectors are and if they have like reproducible, you know, catch patterns year after year, is we might end up being able to stratify by sectors if they're really significantly different. Right now, this is a generic approach, and I'm thinking you could probably map map a lot of these sectors into some of these gear type and area combinations, but I think it's a question, you know, in terms of after the first couple of years, seeing how stable the sectors are, do they have distinct catch patterns, can we subdivide on that level, is it humanly possible to do that, and then characterize the variability in the sector and then find out how many days you actually need to get a precise, accurate estimate in that sector. We're going to need initial data in order to feed those sets of models.
Yeah,
I mean, these are based on, you know, a series, typically have been based on a series of VTR records and observer data, but VTR and primarily VTR information. So we have a historical background to say, okay, here's the variability in this fishery, so we're going to need to sample it at this rate. We don't know what the variability is going to be in those sector fisheries. And when we do, we can see if it's feasible to do that or not. It might be logistically too tough to do, but we will have an idea after the first couple of years.
Can I suggest it will be very difficult logistically to do, since these sectors are of interesting composition in that they cut across different gear types. They up and down the coast. They're not specific fleets in specific areas keying in on specific species with specific gear. It's a real mix. So I know you're already aware of the challenge in it, and I hope that we'll through the work that you and others at the center do, we'll be in a better position to know whether we actually can effectively determine, you know, with some reliance, what actually they are, you know, catching. Okay.
Now, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of the heterogeneity within the sectors, as opposed to here, where the approach we've taken here, which is what's the common denominator that we have here in terms of something like a gear or gear in an area fished.
If I may, just one quick question. I noticed that you have a new fleet. It's called a beam trawl. That's news to me. I guess I have been asleep with the switch. What fishery has a beam trawl as a gear being used to target it?
I'll have to punt on that one.
Dave, that's the Hook Association starting up a beam trawl fishery.
Really?
No.
I was going to say, you've gone from an environmentally friendly gear type to a horrific gear type in terms of impact on the habitat. That's why I want to know. Beam trawls have very significant impact on habitat. So if it's a new fleet, I'd like to know where it is and what they're targeting.
We'll get back to you on that one. I had Mary Beth, then Ron, and then I want to wrap it up.
I just wanted to point out on this handout summary that Wendy brought, on the back it lists what's available in the report. And last year, after we got the report from Paul in January, I actually did go to the website, and if people have a chance, I think it is worth looking at the actual report. And Wendy, is it under the sampling branch? I mean, I think that's the link that I got to it last year.
Yeah, I think this has, if I go back to the, that's the copy that you have in front of you, the paper copy, and you're talking about the big one?
Yep.
Which, let's see,
I know that last year.
That's also available under our major website, under the center website. So if you search under SBRM, you'll be able to find it. It may be on the Observer website as well.
Okay. I'm not sure if it is.
Yeah. So a lot of those are duplicated in two places.
Oh yeah. I just think it's valuable. I think John raised some important, questions about. I mean, I think we'd like to see a summary of who catches what, who discards what, and by FMP and fishery gear type. And you can get at it through the information in the report. But you have to kind of go through the back door instead of the front door. And it takes a while to sort of, piece together like a picture of a fishery and what their interactions are. You could spend hours looking at the information. So I think what we're saying is that a summary of what actually you have for information in some way that's useful to us. But I think I'm not sure that we can really answer how to easily prioritize observer days. But I do think that it's interesting to look at. There's a lot of data there.
I'd say in terms of prioritizing, is there something that you know is going to happen that we don't? And that's where if you have specific information on something that's going to emerge or that's a huge problem from your perspective, that's where we'd be able to incorporate, certainly able and interested to incorporate that information.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. A couple of quick questions through you, Mr. Chairman. Wendy, the unlikely filter, does that mean unlikely to have an observed catch?
It's unlycely to have bycatch of that species there.
I'm just curious, why was the unlikely filter turned to likely for the Mid-Atlantic scallop dredge fishery? We have only had 8 takes in 5 years.
I'm going to have to refer that to the turtle biologists who updated that. I don't have that documentation here.
And then in the chart number 5, that first the column that says 2010 recommended sea days, is that based on the CV of 0.30? Is that the column?
If it's under recommended sea days, that's based on that's a target CV of 30%.
So what I really find curious here for scallop dredge access areas, limited access Mid-Atlantic, it comes up with 93, but then for scallop dredge limited access open areas, it comes up with 3,443. I mean, we have more days in the access areas, which are the high turtle take areas, than we have in open areas total throughout the range of the fishery.
Okay, that's where... Let's see. If you turn to table 4, there may be
that.
Some background information there, and I'm not sure if it is actually going to be there, but it might be there.
It has that same 3,433
number. So the coverage in the AA limited is has basically pilot looks like pilot coverage in there. Whoops, hold on a sec. The 93. Okay, that's pilot coverage because we don't have coverage on that fishery. So that's your 93, your line 28. So that's targeted for pilot coverage. And then the open access line 32 is being driven by turtle bycatch.
Okay, so I guess, again, my question is why they would turn on a likely filter when we are so unlikely to have catch. I mean, that was all in the SBRM discussions as we went through the amendment. And it would seem the way to deal with the scallop fishery would be to look at what funding is available, how many days it could be covered, and then to allocate it amongst the prime months. Now, the council has taken action, actually, to shift a lot of effort out of the turtle season. So that's even going to have a further impact. But we have the numbers in Framework 21. So the approach just seems more of an exercise than actually trying to get to the real numbers. So thank you.
Okay, unless there's something really compelling, I'd like to cut off the discussion now. Like I said, we're going to revisit in April. take a good look at the 11 by 17. Look for cells that you think need some attention or have too much attention, whatever the case may be, and come prepared to make recommendations so that we can forward them on to the center. Okay? Wendy, you're on tap for the next agenda item, too. I'm not sure how long you think that takes. I'm just looking at the time and trying to figure out if we should break for lunch and hold you over, or if you were planning on leaving right after that.
I can stay here for as long as you like, and I can make this presentation as long or short as you like. There's probably about 3 hours worth of material in here.
I'm going to turn to Dr. Pearson and ask him how detailed he thinks we're going to get on the trial calibration discussion.
Not very long, because I don't see the data in this report that I would like to see. But that's, I'm sure, in the full report, and I'll get to that afterwards. So not many questions for me.
Is the preference of the council to do the trial survey, take a lunch break, and then do Red Crab and Comet? People want to eat now? People prefer to eat now. All right, we'll break for an hour, and we'll come back. Thank you.